God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here in your first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. You can unmute yourself, say hello. All righty then. I've apparently forgotten how to run a Zoom meeting. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are on step four, part two. We'll be covering the paragraphs in the Big Book regarding the inventory, particularly fear and sex. And I'd ask you guys to welcome our panel this evening. We have Elaine and Morgan. So I'm going to share my screen. And we're going to start tonight on page 67. Let's see, step four says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Morgan?
Hello, I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mo.
I have a sobriety date. It's November 15th, 2013. Can you hear me all right? Yeah, you can hear me? No? I can't hear you.
That's not going to work, Mo. Let's let Elaine go, and then you can reconnect on your phone. Is that cool? It's like you're underwater.
It's all good. I'll hop off and hop on.
Now you're good, but okay, bye.
Okay, my name is Elaine, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Elaine.
Hello, everybody. I first wanted to thank everyone with their video on. It's just makes it feel more like I have somebody to watch while I'm sharing. My sobriety date is November 6, 2008. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people. And currently, I am looking for a new home group. But there's a couple meetings that I have as like my temporary right now, or at least one, the Thursday night. I don't know the name of it, but I really love it. It's at 7 o'clock. If you want to know more, catch me after. The thing I liked the most about this paragraph is the end, honestly, where it says, it set in motion the trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seemed to cause more trouble. I'm sure like many of you, I walked in and I was the victim. If you had the life I had, you would have drank like I drank. Nothing went right. I had a terrible childhood. And then somehow I made my way, through the world. And I fed off that. Like, my disease fed off that, and I was really, really good about it. I had absolutely no idea that I was not a victim, that life is just life. And I thought that I was this just misfortunate soul wandering the earth until hopefully one day I'll die soon. That was my game. That was my goal, you know? And I completely understand. I was talking to somebody last night. They're on step 9 and they're like, well, maybe I can just, you know, on my own. And I'm like, what? I don't know, on your own, that's pretty dangerous. Thank God I had a sponsor when I was going through these steps, because who the hell was going to show me what I absolutely could not see myself? I think that's what's so amazing, especially about step 4. Like, every step of the way, I was insanely overwhelmed with what I was seeing on paper. Like, I had never seen that person before. What are you talking about? I'm not afraid of anything. Look how far I took me, you know? I'm the one that got me here, you know? And I thought that that was my strength, you know? And I just came to realize, once I got through this step, especially the fear inventory, how much of a shell I was, how I felt like nothing, to be honest with you. And I felt like, especially after finishing the resentment inventory and now looking at my fears, that I had absolutely nothing to hold on to. Anything I thought I knew was out the window, you know? And again, thank God I had a sponsor, because I didn't have this amazing connection with my higher power at the time. So I just had her and a couple people that I was willing enough to talk to in the rooms. You know, I wasn't very friendly when I came in. And as I started to unfold in the steps, step 4 is so raw, or at least it was for me. I did feel like time had gotten robbed. Once I really started waking up and I wanted this, man, when I started to really want sobriety, I wanted it more than anything in life. I wanted it more than breath, you know? And there, it took a long time for me to realize that that time when I was out there wasn't stolen. It wasn't wasted. And I can only say that because of where I stand today and the person that I am. And I can only say that because of the steps I took. So I think that's all I got on that one. Thanks.
Thank you, Momo.
Thank you. All right, here we go. Is it better now? It's way better on my end, it seems like.
Crystal clear.
All right, back to the old phone. All right, I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. It's November 15th, 2013. This is my home group. Happy to be here. Had a weird day, so bear with me. And then all the, it is what it is. It's just how life is sometimes. But, real quick, I'll just say this story. I'm not one of those people that came into AA and said, I am so down with every single thing that y'all are offering. You know, I basically had to be beaten up with, you know, so many failed attempts at everything else to just give this thing a shot. And even the first time that I had this go around of actually getting sober, first time that I had a sponsor, I was living in Richmond. I did the bare minimum. We did a resentment inventory. That's it. And I was not totally honest. I still wanted to hold on to just about everything, and it ate me alive. You know, I was one of those people that was over 2 years sober and debating buying a gun because that's what sounded like a better idea to me. Because I will try to figure it out. That's my default. I think that I'm going to figure out a better way to do everything. So basically, by the time I moved to Norfolk and, ended up getting a sponsor, I don't really know exactly why. I felt like I was fed up for the first time and that maybe I would just give this thing a shot, like an actual shot. And I remember meeting with that sponsor, and it was the first time in my life that I was actually, you know, not defiant about God or anything like that. You know, I didn't even care anymore. I met with that sponsor and he's like, well, you've been around for a little bit. What are you looking to get out of this? And I'm like, I want to start from the very beginning. You know, I want a completely new experience because I knew what I was doing hadn't worked. So getting up to this point was something that I had never done before. And I didn't really know how fearful of a person that I was. Let me read a little bit of this. So, you know, I basically just said it, actually. In the paragraph after what we read, you know, it's basically talking about self-reliance. I don't think we're going to read that in the paragraphs tonight. I think it got chopped, but I was that person. You know, I think that I'm going to figure this out, you know, and what it looked like before I got sober was, you know, I'll just drink and drown this out. You know, that's really what my solution was, is drinking and drugs. That was the only thing that would calm it down until it stopped calming that down. And once I got sober, like I said, I'd been here for over 2 years, and in, you know, the things that I would do to make myself feel better, sex, gambling, anything that I could do to get myself outside of myself. And I actually sat down and wrote this, and I didn't launch like it says at the end of step three. I set a date, and did it the night before, because that's really what it took for me. I needed the pressure to be on and, you know, actually see all of these common trends of how I am on paper for the first time. So I think that's all I've got for now.
All right. We're going to continue on page 68. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Elaine?
I don't know why I'm underlining this stuff. So I'm just winging this. I have had a really tough time with the higher power stuff. The first time I did the steps, whenever it said God or higher power, I was like, check, check, check. And I got nothing from that. And I solely stayed sober because of service work, to be very honest with you. In the beginning, I truly believed that. And I did the steps at least, and to the best of my ability. And then I did them again and again and again. And it wasn't until I found my second sponsor, nothing to do with the first sponsor, everything to do with me, that she was like, let's do the steps again, like really do them. And we started really studying. And I found that faith means that you have to have courage, actually. And I thought that believing in something made you weak. I had given up on a God when I was about 5. I really didn't like my life. I didn't have the worst, but I didn't have the best. And I just thought that if there was a God out there that cared about me, it wouldn't have given me the life it did. And so I've always struggled with that. And when I came in here and you guys were all like, oh yeah, higher power, you know, go to town and let's get this really awesome relationship with it, I was like, I don't need that at all. I'm good. Just kind of what was shared. Like, I got me, I'm good. Right. Like, I've been doing okay, I think. Yeah, I went to jail, but whatever, you know? And so today is completely different. I don't do anything without my higher power. And I've had a lot of bumps along the road with that. Like, I didn't give up even though I didn't have it, because there were some people in the rooms that had it and it looked good and I wanted it. And they said, do what I do and you can have what I have. And I was like, all right, let me just, you know, and along the way, like I would deviate here and there, but I didn't give up, you know, and that was my fight. And that I came to found out was my courage. Like I have faith that if, as long as I don't give up and I keep fighting and I keep trying, I'll get it. And that's been my experience. Like, as long as I don't give up and I keep trying, like I eventually get it. It's just, I always stick a little, well, I think it should be this way, which kind of messes me up and takes longer for me to get to where I want to go. But where it says we ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Man, I remember the first time I heard the St. Francis prayer, which of course was in these rooms. I was not reading any of that stuff outside of these rooms. I remember I had some time and I was like, wow, could you imagine if that, if you could be that person? Like, could you imagine if that's how you lived? Like, if that's how you saw the world? And that's not how I saw the world at all. I played victim for a while in these rooms, you know, but I wanted to be different. And I started to see that I possibly could, you know? And once I did the fear inventory, I just, like, after the resentment and fear, I did not want to be by myself, you know? And I remember after I did the fifth step and my sponsor was like, all right, now go home and do 6 and 7. I just remember being like, you better exist. You better be out there and you better be bigger than I could ever imagine because I cannot be stuck with me. I can't be stuck with this. And my sobriety's kind of been like that throughout the years. I just keep meeting myself, honestly. I just keep unraveling to myself the more I decide to build a relationship with myself. And sometimes I really don't like what I see. I was talking to my sponsor tonight and yeah, I was not the best person last night. You know, was I the worst? No. Was I the best? No. You know, and we talked about like, okay, you've seen a part of you that you don't like and let's do something about it, you know? And I got to tell her that no matter what the situation, if I just pause, I absolutely know that my higher power will give me the guidance to walk through and be the woman I actually want to be. I can't be that woman right now. Like left to my own devices, I know I can't be that person. You know, a gift of this program has shown me that I have limitations and that's okay today. But if I wait, if I pause and I pray, I will be shown. And I can only say that to you because that's been my experience. Like, I can't give that to you. I'm really sorry. But if you keep fighting for it and you have enough courage today to want it, I mean, I got it. So you can probably get it. Thanks.
Thank you. Bubba?
Thank you. Perhaps there is a better way. Yes, there is. I, you know, like I had said before, I really, the only time I had ever prayed was in a period of when I was completely dry, sober before I had ever taken this, you know, so that's like the, you know, I was actually open to this idea once I got to this point. And a lot of, I don't know. It was funny. I read, hopefully you guys didn't burn your inventory because it's great for the, great for your 8-step list. But I was reading over some of these fears from that original, inventory. I hold on to it. It's kind of nice to look back on and see how some of this stuff isn't really there anymore. You know, it's not holding me down. And I can really only attribute that to, you know, through doing all of this stuff, you know, having some sort of power that's not me constantly solving my problems, that I'm continuously trying to do a little bit better to get towards. And, you know, it says, we ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Oh my God, I did that so much after that fear inventory. I'm like, this stuff's never going to go away. But really in time it did. I just couldn't see it then because, you know, I want immediate relief. That's what I'm used to. I'm used to just kicking back and feeling good. You know, a lot of growth, you know, like my whole experience in AA has just been so much growth and being so uncomfortable at so, like, a lot of the time. And that's really how I grow, is feeling uncomfortable, doing things I don't want to do, doing things that I think aren't a good idea. But everybody around me is like, hey, maybe if you do this, you're going to feel a little bit better. You know, why don't you go talk to that new guy? You know, little things like that. Direct our attention to what he would have us be. I just think that's amazing. It's, to me at least, saying, you know, maybe you should try to be a little bit more helpful. You've spent a lot of time only thinking about yourself, and only what would, you know, get you something, what's going to make you feel better. You know, that's how I lived my life for the longest time up to this point. And don't get me wrong, I'm still a pretty, you know, I'm thinking about myself most of the time, but I'm conscious of that. I can actually see that today. Back then, I couldn't see that at all. Yeah, I think that's all I've got.
Awesome. You guys are great. We're going to keep going now on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cries that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we don't have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Elaine?
Oh, thank you for that presentation. So now about sex. I love how it says, we do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. Like, I don't know what works for you and what doesn't work for you, and I'm not about to share what you should do with your life. I know that when I approached this, especially with my second sponsor, so the first time I did my sex inventory, it was about the, honestly, the number I didn't like and all the times I wanted to forget something because I was trying to fill a void. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. I was obviously searching for something, and what was shared, what Morgan shared, like I would fill that with anything, you know? And sex was one of those things that I filled that with as well. But I remember when I did it with my second sponsor, she was very big on, I don't care who the hell you were with. I care why you were with them, you know, for whatever reason. If it was a one night, if it was 6 months, they didn't usually last longer than that. So we'll stop there. And I really liked that kind of avenue of looking at it. Like, she was all about, well, what were you bringing to the table? Because I always wanted to look at what they were bringing to the table or what they weren't bringing to the table. I just wanted to look at their side, you know? And she was very much like, these are relationships, whether it was for 5 minutes, 5 hours, 25,000 hours, like, it doesn't matter how long it was for. It matters why you even showed up to the table and what you brought to it. And I needed that. Right? Because I was just looking at regret, you know, it's not about that. And so when I started looking at the sex inventory like that, and I started looking at, you know, well, what did I do? Why did I, you know, I don't know, the table analogy was really great for me, because I would be like, well, why did I even go to that table? Like, what was I looking for at that specific table? And every time I looked at that, sadly enough for me, right, this is just my experience, and there wasn't even a table. Like, I don't even know why I was there, and I surely wasn't there because of whoever was sitting at the table. And that just honestly broke me down. It broke me down, and it made me have to look at, well, what the hell are you even bringing to the table? Why are you even walking up to someone's table? That's not even fair to them. That's their table. And then you just come thinking, well, I'm just going to make this my table. And I mean, it was powerful stuff for me. It was really, really powerful stuff, the whole table analogy. And but by the grace of all the gods in all universes, someone married me in sobriety. That's AA right there. And I think, I know for a fact, the reason why I even got married is because that's how I look at our relationship. You know, I'm very quick to look at, well, what is he bringing to the table? Because he ain't bringing nothing to the table today, you know? And then I'll stop and pause. Sometimes I have to call my sponsor to do that. And then I say, oh, I was bringing Mean Girl to the table. I was bringing, well, why don't you do all the things I want you to do to the table? You know, and I don't know. It was just, man, I'll never be able to give back to AA what it's given me. And sponsorship, I mean, I will just be the person that's annoying talking about it because I wouldn't have figured that out on my own. You know, I would have just saw, oh, it's a sex inventory. Let me write down all my numbers. You know, it just became so much more than that. And I became so much more because of that. So I'm forever grateful for sponsorship, man. Oh, thanks.
Thank you. Morgan.
Thank you. Yeah, I was told like this too. This isn't a list. You're not going through a list of every single person that you've ever been with in your entire life. Where have you been self-seeking? Where is the harm been caused here? You know, where were your motives? And that kind of, you know, narrowed it down. So I'm like, why am I going to really make a list of every single person that I've ever been with in my entire life? That's not it. You know, it says it right there. We don't want to be the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. And so basically I love when we read something and then I just totally blank on what I was going to say. Yeah, so what can we do about them? Basically, I don't know. I can't really add much more to what's about to come next because I feel like that's where everything else is gonna come. Yeah. So I'm gonna hold off till then.
Cool. Yeah. Let's see. On page 69, it tells us exactly what we can do about them. We reviewed our conduct over years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Elaine?
So yeah, I had kind of shared about this, especially looking at how you're selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate. Who had we hurt? I had a really hard time anytime I did in this step when it says unjustifiably aroused jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness, because somehow I thought I was an angel, which I was not. So I always like got stumped on that one. Like, oh no, it was them, not me. Forever playing that victim card. But I already shared about that, but the thing I really like is, and I have a weird story of the idealist. So my first idealist was like a child's. He has to have tattoos and listen to me and, you know, all these weird things. And when I met my husband, I just thought something was really weird, like how we connected right away. And something told me to go back and look at my child idealist, and he met every single one of them, which I still to this day think is the weirdest thing ever. Because I had some really weird things on there, like has to be a handyman and all the, I don't know. When I grew up in recovery and I made an ideal list, I just remember halfway through, you know, I finally understood what you want, can you give? You know, I don't, there's more better ways to say that. But when I was making my ideal list, I understood the whole molding myself. Like, I want to be able to give that. And I think that that's because, like what Morgan said, like, I stopped looking at the sex inventory as a list, and I started looking at the conduct of it all, like my conduct of it all. And therefore, because I'm already looking at the table, like, what do I actually want to bring to the table? Because once I started looking what I really was bringing to the table, I didn't like it at all, obviously. So when I was making that ideal list, paragraph, whatever form you want to make it in, it helped me kind of mold what I was going to bring to my higher power, which I had never done before. And I had like 5 years of sobriety at that point. And I just, for once, I was like, damn, I kind of want to be as close to that ideal as possible. And I know I can't do that on my own. And so that was just my path. And so if it took 5 years of pain, I stayed sober. Thanks.
Thank you. Morgan?
Morgan, I don't even need to introduce myself again. I should know this. This is my home group. Yeah, so we reviewed our conduct over the years. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Who had we hurt? So this was tough for me because I had been hiding the fact that I was gay for 22 years, and it was definitely a hard process because most of this looked like for me was I'm going to get what I want, which was I want to feel good. That's what I'm going to get out of this. And I'm going to probably ghost you after this. And a lot of times there were girls involved that it was, I'm going to make it seem like this could be something, but knowing that it could never be something. And I'm going to just ghost, you know, I was playing some sort of game to make it seem like, you know, I was just like everybody else on the outside in the real world, you know? And I just couldn't hang on to that any longer, you know? And that was the first time that I had ever written any of that down on paper too. the fact that, you know, I knew I couldn't drink over this anymore, and I knew that I couldn't hold on to it any longer, really is what got me to actually do this. I didn't, you know, it's like I wanted, there were plenty of times, like in the beginning, you know, especially when I was holding off on doing this, that I really strongly, not long after I moved here, I remember driving back to Virginia Beach, taking the Waterside Drive exit, and debating just pulling the car into the guardrail. That's how miserable I was holding all this stuff in. So the only sort of sex conduct or relationship or anything that I had ever had was based on some sort of selfish motive, something that, you know, it was honestly good for me though, because I could see that, and it was like I had a fresh start, really, after having this all down on paper. And you know, where were we at fault? You know, a lot of times it was me. So annoying doing this on my phone because people are texting me. A lot of times it was just me getting what I want, and just, you know, leaving somebody in the cold. People would get feelings. I'm pretty easy to get along with. People tend to just, I don't know why, but dig my presence. Once I'd see that happening, I would be gone, you know, block the number, postpone and evade. I will talk to you later. And that's just kind of what it looked like. I didn't know how to have a healthy relationship. And so basically, you know, we in this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. That was not too hard for me, you know, because it was basically a fresh start for me. It was easy to see that everything I had been doing up to that point, as far as sex relationships, it was not good. I didn't really know how to do any of that in some sort of healthy way. And thank God for AA. I'm not even lying. I just got married right before this pandemic. That's weird to me. You know, that's very weird to me. I didn't think that that was going to be a thing. And that's not of my doing, you know. I was just so broken that I was like, I'm going to just do whatever it takes. And I did find, you know, like a few months after I had done that original inventory, I had done another one, and you know, the sex conduct was similar on it because I was doing the same things and I was still miserable. You know, I'm like, okay, I really see here where all of this stuff is wrong. You know, well, what do I do about it? Maybe I'll pray a little bit more. Maybe I'll talk to that new guy a little bit more. Maybe I'll reach my hand out. Maybe I'll call some other alcoholics. There's so many things, you know, I need to not be thinking about me as much and what's going to make me feel better. Like I said, because that's all I really knew how to do. I mean, I was willing to grow toward it. And, you know, when I first got into this relationship, it was all a learning experience for me. But because I was free of this stuff, you know, it was amazing. It was a whole new experience to me, and I'm still learning daily. But it's awesome. And I cannot stress that this, none of this was my idea, and none of this I did on my own. I know that for a fact. Thanks.
Right on. We're going to continue on page 69. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Elaine?
I think in general, we should just avoid hysterical thinking and advice. So what I like about this is where it says, we must be willing to make amends where we have done harm. And then at the end, the right answer will come, comma, if we want it. And for me, now again, I'm coming from just a relationship standard of it doesn't matter what label you hold. So when I did my sex inventory the second time and, you know, the table came about, I took that into all of my recovery, actually, and I branched it out to my mother's table, my boss's table, you know, and so I didn't hold on to the word sex. I grew from that, willing to grow towards it, but they're talking about the idea thing. And so I started to see I needed to make tiny amends, which, I mean, you're bleeding into 10 there, but I just started to see that I was actually willing to make amends where I had done harm. And in early sobriety, I was doing harm all the time, sadly enough. I just was where it says sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I was definitely the sometimes slowly person. But the thing I didn't give up on, and again, I didn't have a great relationship with a higher power, so I don't know where it was coming from, but the whole, the right answer will come if you want it. And some days I didn't want it. Some days I liked my answer, whether it hurt or not. And that's just what it was. I mean, that's just sobriety, to be honest with you, or at least that's been mine. Through the years, I just don't like how my answer feels. So I decide to go look for another one. And when I actually look and I'm willing to look, I get it. And that might not be in my time frame. It usually is not. And that's why I have to pause. I'm a big pause person, because if I don't pause, I will do the wrong thing. I always do. I learn from experience. So, you know, especially with kind of like what I'm involved now, it's like, I need to pause because I actually want to be different in that relationship, you know? Another quick little story about making an amends in the moment, especially in a sexual relationship, let's just say. I remember I did not want to be vulnerable before I got married with my partner, and I would get mad. I get mad. I have anger issues. So I can get mad real easy, and then I can get really mean. I've never been physically violent, but I have definitely been verbally violent, like really, really bad. And I'm not proud of that. And so I try to keep very diligent about my words and the tone in which I use them, because that's how I like to hurt people. And I say it like that because that's my natural, that's my go-to on my own without a God, you know, and without you guys. And so when I was trying to be in this relationship, you know, and actually trying to like be in it, that meant that sometimes I had to be honest about my emotions in the moment, or I had to, you know, I'd be like really mean in the morning because a shoe wasn't where I wanted the shoe to be. Okay. I'm not exaggerating. And that would set me off, you know. And if I haven't gone to a couple meetings in a couple days, man, I'm in pain. So I'm just going to assume you're the one that caused that. So now I'm going to put you in pain. Like, that's me. That's my natural. Like, I'm not going to hide that, you know, cause I want to be better. And so it was really, really hard for me to, by like early afternoon or early evening, start to be like, hey, listen, so this is what's going on inside of my head, right? Like, and that's why I was acting the way I was. And I'm really sorry for that. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I was not equipped to do that in relationships. Like, I had never brought that to the table before. And I just remember that was pretty profound stuff for me. I'm sure he had no idea what was going on. But for me, like, to let you know, hey, I acted this way because of this, and I'm really sorry, and I was wrong, you know, and I'm going to try to be better. And then to actually go and try to be better, like, yeah, that took me some years in recovery to even want that, right? But I stayed sober. And so I go back to, you know, the right answer will come if you actually want it. And that's never been me just sitting around waiting for it. That means I had to move a little bit first, you know, until I started getting more courage to move more, you know, and my higher powers always had my back with that stuff. But I mean, this is where you got to have some courage if you want to fight through this stuff, if you're anything like I am. Thanks.
Awesome. Momo.
That brought up something funny. So like I said, I, you know, in first real relationship in my life and long before I got married, I remember, you know, I'm one of those people that, you know, I've been lone wolf doing my own thing for, you know, my whole life, really. I was a pretty crazy kid, you know, started drinking very early. So I'm used to just going and doing what I feel like doing. And I remember this, one argument. It wasn't even really an argument as much as it was like, I had obviously been very selfish. I'm like, all right, so this weekend I'm going to go to New York and I'm going to, you know, go do this. And then next week I'm going to do this. And I remember he was like, are we going to ever do anything? You know? And it just kind of smacked me in the face. I'm like, oh, I'm doing the same thing that I used to do. So it's really funny. And thank God for prayer and talking to a sponsor. I do love hear how it says counsel with persons is often desirable. This is like, I love these like casual jabs. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. It's like, yeah, people got a lot of opinions, but their opinions don't matter. You know, it's really between you and God. It's not, you know, who your best friend thinks you should do, or or anything like that. So it's just love how they casually put stuff in there like that. It's like, yep, people got a lot of opinions. Doesn't matter. Yeah, and I do love, you know, in meditation we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. In, you know, through prayer and in just constantly seeking, you know, I've realized that right answer will come, and it's not always what I either want it to be or think it's going to be, you know, and if I'm in it, then, you know, everything's okay, no matter what the outcome is. And, you know, it took me a while to realize that a lot of things, you know, that aren't in my control don't have to end up the way I want them to for me to be okay with it. And, you know, yeah, for me to be okay with it, really. Everything just ends up working itself out if I'm tuned in constantly. So yeah, I think that's all.
Well, it's been another quick hour. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't share my screen. We got one more paragraph tonight on page 70. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. Elaine?
I mean, I'm sure you guys already guess. I just want to share, when it says, we hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. Yeah, that was a check for a couple of years. Like, I wasn't convinced at first, and I needed to be around the fellowship, which helped because I was so involved in service work, to see that others were convinced. And I had faith that whatever was working for them could work for me. So if you're at that point where, like, I'm not convinced at all, that's fine. I wasn't either, and I stayed sober. I was at a point where I was willing to cling on to anything. And if you had something that looked pretty amazing, I had faith enough that maybe it could happen for me. So I definitely have to share that, because I don't want, you know, you decide if you get hung up on something or not. I learned that when I had to let go of the word God. Somebody was like, yeah, it's just a word. Why don't you let that go? And the other thing I wanted to share was when it says, you know, we pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. That basically does not stop at the sex inventory. That is my life. Like, that's my essence. I do not leave my bed in the morning without just literally living that. And I don't know how I incorporated that into all of my affairs. I don't think you decide that. I think you just keep trying every day. But for guidance in each questionable situation, I ask for guidance in any situation of my life, getting in my car, you know, like, it just, I can't even believe I'm talking about my higher power like this. It's absolutely, like, I'm just not alone anymore. I'm sorry, I just got really emotional. Like, for the strength to do the next right thing, like, my second sponsor passed away, and I lost all faith in my higher power at that point. I was like, how could you do that to me in my recovery? And I did not turn to my higher power for any of these things because I was mad. I was mad, and I was acting like a child in my early 30s. And now this is all I do. And the only way I got back to this is because I just kept going to meetings. And it's just amazing that I automatically reach out for this kind of stuff. So I guess my last word is, if you feel hopeless when it comes to a higher power, please talk to me afterwards and do not give up. If you really want this, fight like hell for your life, because you can actually get it. And I'm insanely grateful. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, I thank you so much for that. That was awesome. It took me a while to really get to that point too, that I would constantly seek, you know, instead of getting out of that, or it took me a while to really get out of that, I'm going to solve this immediately thing, you know, pausing, realizing, okay, this really isn't up to me, whatever the outcome of this is. So it took, you know, it really took, for me at least, I didn't really start seeing some outcomes from the praying and the seeking of power other than me. I started seeing it right around this time, you know, in writing this down, and then in telling this to somebody else for the first time in my life, like all of that stuff. So this shit is magic. I'm not even gonna lie. And I would have told you that you were lying if you had told me this before. But I really just had to give it a shot myself and find out. And I will come back here. It says sex is very troublesome, which it was for me. And every single time my sponsor would say, hey, maybe you should, you know, go to that meeting tonight and go try to help somebody, you know. That's really what this is all about. This, everything in here is to get me closer to something that is not me, to solve all of my problems and to get me to thinking more about you and how I can help. Because, you know, I think I can speak for most of us, when I say that a lot of us have been selfish our whole lives, and maybe we should try to help somebody else. Yeah, it says, we hope now you are convinced that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your gross handicaps, you have made a good beginning. Yeah, that being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. And I really did. And, you know, it was even harder, telling that to somebody else, I will say. And it was kind of freaky seeing that down on paper for the first time, but I wouldn't trade it for the world with, for, you know, the way things panned out. There was so much fear involved, you know, in my life leading up to this point. And if you would have told me the outcome, I wouldn't have believed you. Like I said, this is magic. If you're new, I highly recommend getting with somebody that has done this and asking them for help, because life can get really, really good if you just say, screw it, I don't have a better idea, I'm in, let's do it. So yeah, you don't have to be in pain all the time like I was. So thanks.
Thank you both. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential. At every level of AA service, it is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements for the good of AA tonight? You are allowed to unmute yourself. All right. Well, at our home group meets regularly Monday nights at 7 o'clock. Come back next week. We'll have steps 5, 6, and 7. You'll get a 3-for-1 deal next Monday night. And on Sunday, we've got Tina A. from Los Angeles, California, speaking at the Sunday night speaker/Ask It Basket meeting, Sunday night, 7 p.m. That meeting is also on the TidewaterInnerGroup.org, or you can go to simpleactions.net. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Yay. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be hanging out after the meeting. Please feel free to bring up the topic. In closing, I'd like to thank the panel again. That was awesome. I wish you guys could have brought more heart to it, you know. Whew. I've barely recovered. And thank everyone who participated, my co-hosts. And after the Lord's Prayer, everyone can feel free to say thank you after the Lord's Prayer. In the meantime, could I have a volunteer to read? Oh my goodness, I didn't get it queued up. Would somebody please read the last few paragraphs on page 164?
I'm Grant, I'm an alcoholic.
G Money.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. That your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass in God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks for letting me read.
I gotta quit doing balloons before. Ooh, that crack's not going to smoke itself. Okay, so sorry about that. Could we, you want to say the Lord's Prayer? Should we do that? Let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.